We're doing Kohelet. We're up to what's called the fifth chapter, sixth pasuk. And Shlomo HaMelech has been describing that there is an order to the world, and Hashem gives a blessing to those who do charity, who are just. And then Shlomo says in pasuk Vav, Ki v'rov chalomot v'havalim u'dvarim harbei ki et Elohim yiram. Shlomo says, Ki v'rov chalomot. There are many dreams, many dreamers. And there is havalim. There's a lot of foolishness out there. U'dvarim harbei. And if you go looking, you'll find a lot of things out there trying to mislead you. If a person is looking for signs, then he will find signs. If a person is looking for fortune tellers, he'll find fortune tellers. If he's looking for dream interpreters, he'll find dream interpreters. There are many soothsayers out there. There are many people who will guide you and misguide you. And the rule, the golden rule is, ki et Elokim yira. Be a God-fearing person. You want to succeed in the world. You want a theme, a motto to live by. Ki et Elokim yira. And here Shlomo HaMelech is telling us something which will be his bottom line at the end of the book too. Sof davar hakol nishma. But here he isn't. He doesn't yet hit the bottom line. Now, ki et Elokim yira. Rather than listening to all the dreams and dreamers, all the fortune tellers, be a God-fearing person. So this has many levels of interpretation. One of the frustrations of humanity is that we don't know what's around the bend. We don't know what's happening tomorrow. Life would be very different if we had a way of anticipating what's coming. If a person knew how long he's going to live. If a person knew how long he'd be healthy. If a person knew when he'd find his wife, when he'd finally have kids, when he'd merit to have the things he's praying for. We don't know. And so there's this great temptation to tap into the future. Let me know what's coming. Tells us Shlomo HaMelech, ki et Elokim yira. And at first glance, you ask yourself, what's the connection? I'm talking to you about, will I have a job tomorrow or won't I have a job tomorrow? You're talking to me about being a God-fearing person. Where do the two meet? And the answer is, if I recognize that He is HaElokim, the omnipotent who's running the world, and I really recognize that, so then the motto by which I live by is Ki et Elokim yira, being a God-fearing person. I know He controls it. The soothsayers, well, they have their visions for whatever they're worth. Shlomo HaMelech says, don't try to conquer the future. What we're trying to do when we go to someone who will tell us our fortune is we're trying to ensure what the future holds for us. That's it. Now I know. You don't know. And we have a whole life that we spend trying to force God's hand. I'll buy life insurance because then whatever happens, I'm okay. I'll buy medical insurance. I'll buy more medical insurance. We try to keep insuring our future. So a certain amount is correct. But beyond that is already ridiculous. Shlomo HaMelech says, Ki et Elokim yira. Be a God-fearing person. He's running the show. You shouldn't look for all these fortune tellers. The Targum over here adds another level of interpretation. Arum chakimaya tzadikaya tehei meshamesh. Learn by the wise, pious people. Learn from them and be a God-fearing person. So he sticks in here a lot. He's saying, don't go to all the false prophets, people who tell you all kinds of fortunes. No, that's all wicked people. And the truth is, it's very interesting that he calls them wicked people. You'd say they're just trying to earn a dishonest buck. He calls them a wicked people. Life has taught me to understand this Targum. Because very often people make big mistakes in their life based on the advice of people who shouldn't be giving the advice, based on the fortune teller who knows he's a charlatan. And so the idea that the Targum calls them wicked people, it's not just a dishonest buck. It's not just selling a pack of chocolates that you'd have 20 chocolates and you took out one. It's much more than that. And the Targum calls them Rishon. So next time you're tempted to call one of these people, just remember what the Targum calls them. Im Oshek Rash. Yeah.
Why does it seem like you mentioned that this is something very similar to what he says at the very end when he comes to the conclusion? Why is he, it seems like, I guess, kind of scared ahead on some of the other verses. It seems like he's kind of, at this point, saying a lot of things, like, this is what it's all about. And, like, that mass is what he really does say at the end it's all about. And why is he throwing this in here? And he goes back to, like, and then I saw all these horrible things in the sun, and it seems all pointless.
So we'll have to answer that bit. Right? Okay. Why is this a Havamina? We'll see in a minute. Yeah?
Can you do the same thing with kosher sources? You know, like, instead of using sorcery and witchcraft to, like, see the future, you can go to, like, a Kabbalist and, like, he can do the same thing through kosher media. And wouldn't it be, like, the fire to do?
I don't know of these things. Sorry. Pasuk Zayin. Im Oshek Rash Vegezel Mishpat Vatzedek Tireh Vamedina Al Titma Al Achayfetz. Shlomo HaMelech says, Im Oshek, Oshek is thievery. Im Oshek Rash. If you see people openly stealing from the poor, Vegezel Mishpat Vatzedek. People are stealing justice. People are stealing righteousness. And you see that it seems that this is being done overtly. V'tzedek tir'eh v'mdina. And yet, it seems like God is showering kindness on that country. Al titma ala chayfetz. Don't wonder, what does God want? Why is he doing that? Seems like he's letting them get away with it. Ki gavoha me'al gavoha shomer u'gvohim aleihem. Ki gavoha, because this is one of my favorite verses in Koheles. Ki gavoha me'al gavoha shomer. The one who's watching them is the high one who is above the high one. Meaning he's higher than the heights. Ki gavoha me'al gavoha. It's the high that's above the high. It's not the high one above the high one, but rather the high that's above the high. It's like okay, you understand what it means.
What is that? Like the high one above the one who's pompous?
No, above all those that are considered high. All those, the kings and the aristocrats and ki gavoh me'al gavoh, is above all high ones. Right. Ki gavo me'al gavo. Yeah. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. Yeah. I always understood another meaning in the pasuk, which I don't know if the sages say, but I think it's very simple in the words. We always attribute to God a certain height. You know, he's above us, but we limit that realm. You know, he's above, but he's that much above. And then he's saying, no, he's above what you know is above. That's why I like the pasuk, because I always find that it's reminding me he's higher than what you call high.
The concept of high is a man-made thing to inflate ourselves. He's above that concept. That's
right. Right. That's why I like the pasuk. That's, I think, is the simple reading of the pasuk. Gavoh me'al gavoh. He's higher than what you call high. Which, if you think about it, is so important, because you'll see it, Bezat Shem, as parents, you try telling a kid, you don't understand, this is dangerous. And the kid says, yeah, I do understand. And you know that as much as he thinks he doesn't understand. Ki gavoh me'al gavoh, he's higher than what, you know, we think we know how high. No.
Like you say, oh, it's my heavens are higher above the earth, so my thoughts are higher than your thoughts.
Yeah. Nahum, you want to say something?
No.
Okay. Sh- shomer. He's watching over what's going on here. The word shomer has more than one meaning. The word shomer could mean watching over. The word shomer could also mean is waiting. Vaviv shamar et adavar. So another level of interpretation here is the one that's higher than the high is waiting. He has patience. One of the strengths of the Ribbono Shel Olam is his patience, his tremendous patience. Ugvohim aleihem. And he has all these high angels that are watching over what's going on down here below. He has all these messengers. He has his way of dealing with everyone. But he's waiting. Ki gavam al gavah shomer ugvohim. And his high messengers, his high angels, are aleihem, are also keeping an eye on what's going on down here. This is an important concept. This is the concept that Rav Nissim Gaon discusses in the beginning of his book, Sefer Maasiyot. The tendency of man to look at an occurrence or a state of affairs and question and say, I don't get it. And it very quickly evolves to something much stronger than that, which is, if you're really out there and you're really running the world, how are you letting this happen? And there are many times that a person can go down that road. And so Shlomo HaMelech's warning, Im Oshek Rash, if you see that the poor are being robbed, V'gezel Mishpat, and all of justice seems to be robbed, V'tzedek Tirev Amdina, yet you see that that country seems to have it so good, Al Titma Al Achefetz, don't wonder, what does God want? That line, don't wonder, he's not just saying, well, here's the answer. He's also saying, don't wonder. And that's the warning that Rav Nissim Gaon also gives us, that sometimes if you let yourself get carried away, which is, again, goes back to the point that Mr. Fleisch was saying, that a part of it is our own pomp, that we're willing to say, you work within my system. Okay, you're bigger than me, but you're still within my system. Meaning the fact that we allow ourselves to judge God is to a certain degree degrading. We're saying, I want to understand. Make it work for me. Gavoh mal gavoh. The answer is, okay, but he's way above. He's above what you think is above. But he is watching over what's going on here. Only he has patience. And so going back to what's the key word in the Pasuk? Al titma. Don't wonder. And that's a very important point because very often, a person will be bothered by what he sees and he has to tell himself, okay, I don't understand everything. I don't understand God's ways. It's true that I'm going to have questions and not get carried away with it. V'yitron eretz bakol hu מלך לשדה נאבד ויתרון ארץ יתרון. What does the word יתרון mean? יותר. The advantage, the benefits that will be in the land. ויתרון ארץ בכל היא. Hashem can take down whatever benefits that they have with anything. Meaning on the one hand, he has Gvohim Aleim, he has the highest angels watching what's going on here. On the other hand, Bakolhi, Hashem has the easiest way in any item Hashem could use to bring a person down. And today we know that. Today we know the smallest chromosome could change everything in a person's life. All it takes is one cell that's rapidly repeating, right? Today we know that. One loose, yeah, you guys know. You know what I'm talking about. A loose chromosome, a loose cell, what are they called?
Mutation.
There's a mutated cell, but there's also...
cancer.
Right, so what's it called? That right, but where it begins, I forgot the medical term for it. So in Chazal's time, they worded it a little differently. They said the smallest fly could kill a person, like the story of Titus, where God sent a little fly in his ear, and then the fly stayed alive and pecked away at his brain and killed him. Titus thought, I'm so great, I destroyed his temple. God said, I'll show you. So he was out at sea and his ship was about to sink. And he said, okay, God. Initially, when he did his rampage in the Holy of Holies and brought a prostitute in there and offered pig on the altar, he said, you see, I killed their God. You see, I could do whatever I want. So then he was taking the loot out to Rome, and there was a storm at sea, and he said, oh, you only know how to fight with the waters. Take me on dry land. That's where I'm strongest. God said, you think you're going to tell me what to do? I have this small little creature, a little fly, and I'm going to take you down with a little fly. You think you're going to take me on dry land? Fine, I'll let you make it to dry land, and I'll show you there. And so when Titus got to dry land, the fly went into his ear, and he started having a pounding headache. And he couldn't figure out what it was, and all the doctors couldn't figure out what it was. And the fly was pecking at his brain, eating away at his brain. And he kept having this terrible headache until one day he was walking by a blacksmith, and a guy was pounding with his hammer and scared the fly, and the fly stopped. So he hired the blacksmith to come to his castle, and all day and all night the guy would be standing there pounding in order to stop his terrible headache from the fly eating at his brain. Well, after a time, the fly got used to it, and it didn't help. So he'd have the pounding of the blacksmith and the fly pecking at his brain, and he ordered the Romans, when he dies, he says, open up my skull and see what was in there, what was going on. And they found a fly that was the size of a bird. It had lived off of his skull, off of his brain, and it became big like a bird. So Hashem said, you want to take me on? That's the big deal. Yitron Eretz, when a land seems to have all the bounty, bakoli, but Hashem could take it down with anything. Hashem could make anything bring down a whole country. Today we know it. Look, Boston has a state of emergency. From what? From the flu. You know, a little germ, and everyone's in panic mode. Yiton Eretz Bakoli. Hashem says, I don't need big things to take people down. Melech l'sadeh ne'evad. Melech l'sadeh ne'evad. Hashem says, I am the king. Now here, if we're talking about Titus, so we're talking about Jerusalem. Hashem says, I'm the king of the field that's being worked on. The idea is that Zion was plowed and destroyed, and Hashem says, I'm the king. So that's one understanding here. Melech l'sadeh ne'evad. Another understanding is Hashem says, if I want to take down the people, v'itron eretz bakoli, I could take down everyone in the country. Melech l'sadeh ne'evad, to the point where the king will be found going out to the field and working the field because he's hungry. If I want to take a country down, I take the country down to the king. You'll see the king going out there to work the fields. And that's something which is recorded in Kings, in the Sefer Melachim. Ahav was a great king. And then there was a drought, and it says Ahav personally went out searching for water. After there was a drought 3 years, he was personally going out on his horses looking for water. Chazal tell us that Ahav was one of those kings that ruled all of planet Earth. Everyone was scared of him. And yet, when Hashem decided to bring him down, so he was brought down to his knees. He comes and begs Elio, give me rain. Pasuk Tet. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef ohev be'amon lo tevua gam ze havel. Ohev kesef. If a person loves silver, he loves money, lo yisba kesef, he will never be satiated with money. Person will always want more. If the focus is the money, so then you're never going to have enough. Umi ohev behamon lo tevua. And whoever likes to have a lot of servants, he won't have enough grain, because if you like the servants, you need a lot of money to fund all that servants, and then people end up destroying themselves. Kamze havel, that even though technically he's helping people, he gives people jobs, but if he likes having people under him, so he's going to have to sustain all those people. And then what he did that helped others ultimately destroyed him. So this pasuk is famous for its simple meaning. Oif kesef lo yisbak kesef. It's very often quoted. You love money, you're never going to have enough money. But the Chazal interpret the pasuk in many, many ways. One way that Chazal interpreted is oif kesef lo yisbak kesef. The word kesef is code for mitzvos. He who loves mitzvos will never have enough. He'll always look for more mitzvos. Umuhev be'amon. If a person loves many mitzvos, but lo tivuam. And yet, among those mitzvahs, sometimes there's no specific one. He likes building a shul, beis mikdash, sefer Torah. So that's also not a good idea. A person should try to have a specific mitzvah which is his. Meaning a person should try to have his mitzvah in life. We do all 613, but you should have a mitzvah. That's your baby. You know, you should have a masechta, that's your masechet. A sefer, that's your sefer. Everyone should try to do all mitzvot, and yet to have their baby. So that's one understanding that Chazal give us in this pasuk. Another understanding Chazal tells is v'itron eretz bakoli, the advantage of earth applies to everyone, meaning even the king, melech l'sadeh nevad, the king is also bound by the earth, meaning he could have all the jewels and gems, but he needs the produce of the farmer. At the end of the day, he doesn't need his jewels and gems. So melech, the king, is also bound l'sadeh nevad. He's also bound to the field. And that's why the best, a person should know that the working the field is always the best. It's interesting, a book came out now, not now, I forgot its name, about how they expect to have hyperinflation coming. They expect the American dollar is going to suffer greatly now because America is going to lose its credit rating. So one of the things he writes is that how do you combat that? So you could invest in the Canadian dollar, that's a steady currency. You could invest in gold and silver. You shouldn't invest in real estate, he says, because that's going to flop some more. But he says if you're going to work in any field, try to work in a field that's as close as possible to the basic food that people need. Because people will always have to eat. Whatever the economy does, people have to eat. So that's this idea. Melech l'sadeh nevad. Even the king is bound by the field. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you still need to eat. Ohev kesef, lo yisba kesef. As much as you love money, money isn't going to satiate you. You can't eat the money you love. Ohev kesef, you could love money, but lo yisba kesef, you're not going to get full from money. Umi ohev behamon, lo tivuah. You could love money so much and still not have grain and go hungry. And that's why Yitron Eretz Bakoli, the advantage of earth, the advantage of working close to the ground, of having your own garden, of having your own source of sustenance, beats everything. So that's another interpretation. Gamzeh Avel, a person can love money so much and have so much money and still be hungry. So that's also Havel. That's another interpretation. A third interpretation, Chazal tell us, Yitron Eretz Bakoli, the wages of Am Yisrael is in all of Torah. Eretz is a reference to Torah. Mishnah, Torah, Talmud, that's all a benefit that we have. But Melech l'sadeh nevad, even the king who can master Tanakh and Mishnah still has to go and work the field. What does that mean? The field is the Talmud. You could know everything, but you still won't know halacha if you don't know Talmud well. So Melech, even one who's a king in other areas, is l'sadeh nevad. He's still got to do the dirty work, sit down and break his head over the Gemara. Working through the Gemara is called working the field. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. If you really love Torah, you'll never be satiated of Torah. But if you work and you like the masses of Torah, you like Mishnah, but you don't have the grains, you don't have Talmud, so then you don't have grain in it then. You know, you gotta have the field. It's not enough to have the Tanakh and the Mishnah. That's pleasurable learning. It's much more fun to learn Tanakh and Mishnah than it is to learn Gemara. Gemara is the hard part. But nonetheless, lo tevuah, you don't have the grains of the learning. You don't have the products of the learning. If you don't get Gemara, the root of it all is Gemara. Gamze Havel. Shlomo Amar doesn't like that either. He complains about that. Yes?
Why?
I'm sorry, but he was waiting first. That's not fair. Give me just a second. Sorry. Yeah?
don't learn Gemara at all, right?
Like, right.
What is this? What do they get out of this?
What a great question.
Is that a clear thing when women don't period, or is it a little bit controversial, or is it just Allah in the head that says they do?
I mean, they're allowed to learn Gemara, but it's like not good. It's like a woman making kiddush or something like that. It's of a...
So I later, if we have time for questions and answers, we have to address that. But again, we have a partnership. We have different roles within that partnership. When a woman is a partner and her husband's learning, so they divide that learning 50-50. Meaning when a person comes to the world to come, so then he's going to get 50% of his learning. 50% goes to his wife, who made it possible for him to learn, 50% he gets. You divide your learning 50-50. So her job is not to learn Talmud per se. We're not discussing right now whether she could, she couldn't, it's advisable, it's not advisable. That's a separate question. But technically, that's not her mitzvah. Her mitzvah is to bring up the house, to do other things. So is she losing out? No, she's not losing out. That's part of the partnership, that we divide 50-50 with our wives.
Every Jew has the obligation to learn a certain amount of Torah, though, like at least like halacha. Like,
so a woman should learn the halacha that pertains to her.
Does she, there's the general halacha, does she get the same merit for learning that a man does for learning the same thing?
That's a good question. For now, we will say yes. And then one day when we get to learn it more in depth, we'll have to analyze that.
A related question like that, when they say a righteous Gentile is a share of the world to come, what share are we talking about? Same share as well. I don't know if there's any definite yes or no answers, but it reminds me.
It's discussed, yeah. Yes, Ari.
When you say that Gemara is the grain, meaning the source of it all, meaning the thing that the king is bound by and the most important, and while Tanakh and Mishnah and everything like that is fun, but really what matters is can you please elaborate on what you mean? Because did the Tanakh not come before, or at least the Torah not come before the Gemara?
No.
No.
Our tradition is that the Torah came with the oral law. So they had a version of Gemara in Moshe's time. They had Mishnah and Gemara in Moshe's time as well. Yes, Moshe learned not only Torah, he also learned Mishnah and Gemara. We have Mishnayos from Moshe Rabbeinu's time. We have Tanakh quotes from the days of Jonah the prophet. Jonah the prophet is quoted in a Mishnah. You have quotes from the prophets and the Mishnayos. This is where Haggai the prophet stood and declared in this the following Mishnah. Okay? I'm just saying that the oral tradition goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. We have Mishnayos that are still the way Moshe taught them.
Like what?
Zeu Mekomon is a whole chapter in Zvachim that we say every morning. That's a word for word the way Moshe taught it. And there are other Mishnahs from Moshe that we know. We see from the Mishnah, you could tell. It's the way Moshe taught it. Yes?
I thought that, I understand the oral law. Moshe Rabbeinu received the oral law. I thought that kind of the Gemara was discussed on how to understand the Mishnah, which was the transmission of the oral law, like, it kind of like separated out. So you had the oral law, and then you got to the point where it got expressed and written down in Mishnayot, which on the next generation wasn't so understood. So to understand the oral law was then expressed through the Gemara, which is trying to discuss into the rabbis about how to understand. So
right.
Said,
so that's wrong.
Learn Mishnah and Gemara, isn't it? The essence that was contained in the Mishnah and Gemara, that's what he learned, or the Dafka was something like Mishnah and Gemara, and it was going to be this time.
The distinction you made between Mishnah and Gemara deserves further elaboration. Meaning, if we'd understand a little bit better the distinction between Mishnah and Gemara, then we could understand why Moshe Rabbeinu needed a Mishnah and the Gemara. In a very coarse way, we could say Mishnah is a short version of the laws, and Gemara is the reasoning behind those laws. that's really inaccurate. It's way too short. Rashi, when he wants to define what Gemara is, and Rashi does it in a few places, has many lines. He doesn't just say what I just said. He says much more. But for now, we can't do more than that. So in a coarse way, that's okay.
It's a topic. The same what you just said about the meaning to make an effort on Gemara. I heard, you know, one of the questions someone has asked, justify his life in the world of come, did you set aside a time for Torah study? And one of the examples that he gave is, if someone's not that bright and not that capable in Gemara study, and if they did Pargabo or whatever they did, that's fine. So you here it would imply that somehow Gemara study is not beyond everybody, anybody. It seems it's essential, whereby it's almost, it seems unfair because there's some people who, you know, just their ego takes a beating and maybe they should apply themselves to a different area. I don't know. That's the question.
Okay, so I think that's a little bit of what Ari was alluding to as well. We have to realize that we're each given our potentials, and we have to realize that potential. And sometimes life does not allow a person to learn Gemara, but he has to accomplish what he can accomplish. If he can accomplish Gemara, he should. Gemara is the greatest form of learning Torah. Now a person can say, I can't. So then we tell him, okay, but then don't give up on learning Torah, because learning Tanakh is learning Torah, learning Mishnah is learning Torah, and God won't hold it against you, and you'll get your great wages because you did the best you could. And when you're gauged in the world to come, you're not gauged based on this ruler, okay, where do you match up? You're gauged based on yourself, given life and what you could have accomplished. That's what you're asked. Okay, did you do the best you could?
Someone has to make an effort, though, to try Gemara.
If a person can, then he should.
Yes.
Gemara is the grain.
You can't say, I don't like it, then I'd rather do something else.
No, there's a famous story. I don't know if it's true, but the story is told that a student came to Rav Nevenzel in Yeshiva Takotel and said, Rebbe, how am I supposed to learn Gemara? I don't like learning Gemara. Now, just so we understand, Rav Nevenzel is the top disciple of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He's considered one of the great poskim that we still have in our generation. Hashem should grant him longevity. Rav Nevenzel is quoted, again, I don't know if it's true, but it's quoted that he said to the student, you don't like learning Gemara? I learned Gemara 20 years and didn't like learning Gemara. It took me 20 years before I started liking to learn Gemara. So, okay, that's not a good excuse. Again, if a person says, I can't, or I'm not going to hack it, so okay, so do something else. And that's when we do tell a person, yes, learning Tanakh is Torah.
Okay,
learning Mishnah is Torah, learning Medrash is Torah, and do it. Rather do that than give up on yourself and go out and smoke. Gemara is still the best in Mala. So. But it's not my fault if I can't. If I can't, okay, so I can't. You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he was an old man, at the end of his life, he was ill. He couldn't learn Gemara, he'd learn Mishnah all day. All he'd do was learn Mishnah. He couldn't learn Gemara, that's it. His head wasn't up there anymore. And okay, so he took advantage of his time and learned Mishnah all day. And there are times like that. I remember when we had one of our kids hospitalized for a month. I couldn't learn Gemara. I couldn't learn Mishnah. I didn't have any time. I didn't have any head. I didn't have any sleep. So I took Rav Nissim Gaon's storybook. That's when I learned it the first time. I took Rav Nissim Gaon, wrote a book to encourage people in tough times. That's when I learned that book, Sefer Maasiyot. I said, okay, a storybook is something I could read at this time. So I'll take Rav Nissim Gaon's storybook. About 7-8 years ago, I had cellulitis. So I had fever and I couldn't learn anything. And I was spending a lot of time waiting for doctors because they couldn't get it to get down and kept getting bigger. So every time they'd send me to another doctor, and I'd sit like 2-3 hours in the waiting room and then meet him for all 30 seconds. And then he'd say, okay, come back to me in 3 days. And then he'd spend another 3 days in bed, come back after 3 days, another 2-3 hours, and same story. So I couldn't learn during that time. I couldn't concentrate. I was having fever, sitting in a waiting room. At the end of the cellulitis, I made a siyum on Derech Eretz Rabbah. I was very happy. I learned all of Derech Eretz Rabbah. That's an interesting, like a medrash. I had a pocketbook, a pocket-sized version with me. That's what I learned throughout that time. Sure, part of the time in the waiting room, my head was on the, you know, I wasn't, not like I could learn it all that time. Okay, fine. But when you could learn, then you got to learn. Yeah.
Why is Gemara the highest form of learning?
So again, it deserves a broader discussion, but on a course level, Gemara is the bottom line. meaning the Torah is a Torah of life. It's about what you're supposed to be doing here. You read the Torah and the Mishnah, and you don't know how it all works out. You don't know how you're supposed to keep Shabbos. You don't know how to set up an Erev. You don't know what blessing to make on cornflakes. So everything you've learned is theoretical. It's not practical. The practical application, knowing, be it in philosophy, be it in halacha, knowing what the Torah wants of you, that bottom line, the final bottom line is from the Gemara. You can't get it any other way. So that's the tevuah, what he describes as the grain, the great product of learning, that's only through Gemara.
What about halacha? Isn't that really the fact? Because we don't pass in halacha.
So you're saying today we have shortcuts. Today we could learn a chayyadam, we could learn kitzur shulchan aruch. That's partially true. On one level, you're right, and that's why people should definitely set up time in their day to learn halacha svarim, so that they know what they're supposed to do. But the truth is that when you'll have to apply the halachic question in a scenario that's slightly different than described in halacha, you have to understand where the halacha is coming from. If you only know what it says, do this now and do that then when you're faced with a scenario that's slightly different, you're stuck. And then you don't really have that understanding of halacha. In order to really understand the halacha, you have to understand where it came from and how it got there. Once you understand that, then you understand how to apply it in all scenarios. So it's true, in our day and age, we don't have a choice. We take these shortcut books and we do learn halacha. But the ideal way of knowing halacha is from the source.
So learning how to pass it through the Gemara?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So the value, we could say, is learning on where the halacha comes from. That's a value in itself, rather than the halacha itself.
Well, that's the highest way of learning halacha. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Why it didn't go another way?